Yes, Your Honor. 2 minutes.
All right.
Thank you. And may it please the court and counsel. This appeal is about preemption and forum selection clauses, but I'd like to talk about summary suspension very quickly because it is a punishment with a grave impact. On one hand, it saves patients' lives, and on the other hand, it has the potential, when used improperly, to destroy the career of a good doctor, and that's what happened in this case. Now, ordinarily, what would happen is that a doctor would exercise his right to appeal and get a fair hearing. That's what happened in this case. And in the middle of the fair hearing, the parties agreed to settle the matter. And the big part of the settlement was this agreement that there would be language placed in the National Practitioner Database, which is essentially, I call it a blacklist for bad doctors. At this point in time, it had been more than 30 days since the summary suspension, so everyone knew that a report had to be filed. So the only question was, what was the language that was going to go into that report? Exhibit A to the settlement agreement provided that language. What happened, though, when the report was actually filed, is that the hospital provided a great deal of additional language that was not included in the settlement agreement, and in fact, that additional language really breached the spirit and the faith of what had been agreed upon, because they added things like the doctor was unable to practice safely, he had a substandard or inadequate skill level, when in fact, in the settlement agreement, all the parties had agreed that summary suspension would not have been imposed but for the absence of a collegial dialogue.
Does the record show that your client filed a dispute with the secretary?
He did file a dispute with the secretary. Well,
timely?
Yes, I believe so. We have not heard back from the secretary, though. It's been a year and a half or 2 years now. As I mentioned before, the jurisdiction of the secretary is extremely limited, and it is only limited to whether a report was filed and whether the action accurately reflects what took place. That's not a substantive review of whether the suspension was appropriate or whether it was justified.
On this record, that shows as a disputed filing by the hospital with the secretary, that would be what the record shows?
Well, the hospital, yes, filed a report. That is in the record, and the report is...
And your client's dispute of it?
Yes, Your Honor, and that's still pending. But again, all this language, this additional language, when a prospective employer looks at this language, that doctor is not going to get hired. And in fact, my client lost his privileges as a result of this. And he has only recently obtained employment, and not in the state of Nevada. So he was effectively run out of town. I'm not here to litigate or relitigate the summary suspension. But what's important to note is that when Dr. Hoffman signed that settlement agreement, he was signing away all of his rights to challenge the propriety of the summary suspension. And he was told that if there was a breach of that agreement, if something that breached the spirit of that agreement was put into the data bank report, he could file a lawsuit in the 8th Judicial District Court, the District of Nevada. In fact, that would be the exclusive jurisdiction for his dispute. And when he filed that lawsuit, the district court judge held that section, which was section 16 of the settlement agreement, was preempted by federal law. So let me talk about preemption very quickly, because we're not talking about express preemption and we're not talking about field preemption. We're talking about implied conflict preemption.
Before you get into the preemption argument,
certainly,
you're representing to this court that somewhere in the record there appears a document in which your client challenged the report to the secretary.
I did not say that. I said that there was a report.
That was Justice Pickering's question.
Okay.
So I'm going to repeat the question. In the district court record, is there a document evidencing your client's challenge of the filing by the hospital with the secretary?
No, because it did not take place until after the action was filed and dismissed.
Okay. So the district court, when it heard this case, was hearing it in the context of no challenge having been filed with the secretary, at least not yet.
I I don't have the actual transcript of the hearing in front of me. I think we had advised the district court judge that that he was preparing a dispute, but I can't recall specifically, sir.
Okay.
And I don't want to make any kind of misrepresentation to the
All
court.
Right.
The district court did not make his decision based on whether or not a petition had already been filed with the secretary or not. He simply said, I have no power to adjudicate this. Your sole and exclusive remedy is with the Secretary of Health and Human Services. So in his mind, it did not matter whether a petition had already been filed or not.
Okay.
So we're talking about implied conflict preemption. There has to be an actual conflict for that doctrine to apply. The only case that was cited to by the respondents as to that issue was the Diaz case, which I'm sure you're all familiar with. But it's important to note that even in the Diaz case, the court said that the court had subject matter jurisdiction over the dispute. It was simply the remedy that the district court imposed, which put the hospital in the position of deciding whether or not to comply with a state court order or to violate federal law. And on that basis alone, decided that preemption did apply. My client was not seeking that type of relief at the district court level. My client was asking for one of several remedies. Number one, imposition of damages for breaching the contract. Number two, compelling the respondents to amend their report so that it would simply match up with what was agreed on in Exhibit A to the settlement agreement. And under federal regulations, the hospital can amend its report at any time if it so chooses. So there was no conflict there. And the third alternative was rescission, tearing up the agreement and sending my client back to the fair hearing and let's finish the fair hearing so that my client can at least have the opportunity to defend his good name. Because what had happened as a result of the proceedings in front of the district court is my client signed away his rights to challenge the propriety of summary suspension, and then really had no remedy to pursue in front of the district court, even though the parties had agreed that if there was any dispute and anything needed to be enforced in the settlement agreement, it would be done in the 8th Judicial District Court. And that's when Judge Wall decided that that particular provision would be unenforceable.
Was there anything in the additional language that was placed in the report that was required by HCFA?
There are
other than the identifying information.
Yeah, I actually have page 26, which is the sheet. There are a couple of lines: basis for action, unable to practice safely; basis for action, substandard or inadequate skill level. My understanding is that those are on a computer that are pull down explanations. You don't type those in, but you select from a laundry list, and there are a number of different alternatives there, including other. Which you could have simply referred back to the agreed upon language. And then in the description, there are two or three extra sentences at the beginning that the parties did not negotiate or agree upon, which puts my client in extremely unflattering.
Those weren't required informational items pursuant to HCFA.
No. Here's all that's required under the regulation. Once you get past name, rank, and serial number, in effect, you have to describe the acts or omissions or other reasons for the privilege loss or, if known, for surrender. If the hospital had simply put the language they agreed upon in Exhibit A in this databank report, they would have satisfied their obligations under 45 CFR 60.9. I'd like to mention one other thing. And again, it goes back to the Secretary of Health and Human Services. There is really no remedy there. The Secretary only decides whether a report was filed and whether the doctor was suspended. There is no discussion, no decision as to whether or not the suspension was fair or appropriate. When Dr. Hoffman signed the settlement agreement, he gave up his rights to challenge the summary suspension. The least that the hospital could have done is simply stuck to the language that it agreed upon. And if they're not going to do that, to at least allow my client the right to sue to simply enforce a contract that has a forum selection clause here in Clark County, Nevada, And as we all know, forum selection clauses are presumed enforceable. And absent some kind of actual direct conflict with federal law, there was no basis to dismiss this case.
But if the court, if the district court were to order what you're asking, which is to say, hospital, file what you agreed to file, it would be ordering the hospital to take action with reference to the federal scheme. And if the hospital's position is that's not accurate, then how do you distinguish this case from Diaz, or do you?
Well, I do, because number one, there's a settlement agreement, and they agreed specifically on what was going to go into the report. Second of all, the language that was agreed upon would satisfy the federal scheme. There's no conflict with the federal law. They're allowed to amend at any time. There's no breach of a federal law or a federal regulation that would occur simply because they changed their report to comply with what they simply agreed to. If the scenario that you described actually took place, then wouldn't that entire settlement agreement be unenforceable? And then, I mean, it would essentially be an illegal contract. You'd have to tear it up, and you would have to go back to the fair hearing. So if that's...
That's your real remedy there, is to go back and have the fair hearing, which was abridged by the settlement agreement, not to coerce filing of the agreed-upon language at this point. Because I don't see how the court could coerce that without running afoul, arguably, of federal provisions.
I asked for both remedies, and I implore Judge Wall, at least if you're not going to compel this, at least give my client a chance to go back and challenge this suspension and restore his good name. And I think I'm past my reserved time.
Any other questions? Okay, we asked you quite a few questions. I'm going to give you your full 2 minutes on rebuttal.
Thank you.
Good morning. John Cotton on behalf of Spring Valley Hospital. This entire case hinges on the proper or improper filing of a National Practitioners Databank report mandated by federal law, the content of that report. Everything before the filing of that report is off the table. These issues they raise about the fair hearing and the suspension of privileges, those were all resolved when the parties entered into the settlement agreement back in 2007. The fact is, all they're objecting to, if you look at the complaint, is I don't like what you put into the federal report. Well, there's a remedy for that, and it's not provided by state law, it's provided by federal law. The federal law, the rights of a doctor as to a National Practitioners Data Bank report, is to have a timely report and have it comply with the federal regulations. Judge Perriger, you asked the question about does this have everything it's supposed to have. If you look at that page 26 you talked about, it's got checkoff boxes. One's marked 47, one's marked 96. The issue isn't whether or not the summary suspension reasons why they had for the summary suspension were right. The question is, why did you have the summary suspension? They're not there to determine whether that was correct or not once you've had the filing on file.
But ordinarily, there's a fair hearing.
There's
in this
normally
case, done away with because there was a settlement agreement in this case, and they structured language to go into the report to be compliant with HICWA. And I know your point is, well, it was indicated to be included, but it wasn't exclusive of other language that could have been included as well.
Well, you can't contract to violate the law, as the court well knows, to not include those other markings, which are mandatory under the drop-down screens that they have, would be violating the federal law. You can't do that. We can include that provision in there by agreement. There's nothing prohibiting you from including something in a federal filing like that, but you do have to file the mandatory filings with the practitioner's database.
Well, and that was my question in the first instance. Was there language that was included in addition to the stipulated language that was required by HICWA?
We included the language that the hospital includes on all of these sorts of matters, which basically is a description of the acts or omissions or other reasons for the action taken. We included that language in there. That's mandated under...
And you're saying that's part of the drop-down menu.
It's part of the drop-down menu. They make you do that. It's under CFR Section 4560.8. It says the information that must be reported. The board must report the following information. You go through the name, the address, and then number 9... a description of the acts or omissions or other reasons for the action taken. 10, a description of the board action, the date the action was taken, and its effective date. And then finally, and this is the drop-down menu where they get plugged in, classification of the action in accordance with a reporting code adopted by the secretary. My client was following federal law. They have to do that. They have a remedy here. It's not to go into district court, because if you did that, you'd have 50 states, theoretically thousands of lawsuits coming down with different results about what's supposed to be included in a federal report. The secretary takes his objection, and I don't know when they filed that. It wasn't in the record that we had before us in front of Judge Wall. But they do have a right to file an objection to that report. And it's noted in the records as a disputed report at that point for any other hospital or anybody that pulls it up. They go through the process, and the secretary looks at it and makes a determination. They look and say, was it proper to file it at all? Which these parties would agree that it was, because they agree by agreement to file the thing. And secondly, whether or not the content is appropriate based on the facts that were submitted to the secretary. And each party has a right, if they want to submit written documents to the secretary outlining their position. Then once the secretary has ruled upon it, he can do one of two things. He can say, I happen to believe that this was appropriate reporting by the hospital. They put in the things they were supposed to do. It accurately reflects what action was taken at the time of the summary suspension and what the end result was. Or he can say, that shouldn't have been put in there. That's inappropriate. Now, whichever one of those he does, if he rules against the doctor, they have a remedy to take that on appeal to the federal United States District Court.
Mr. Cotton, what was the point in the settlement agreement of having the forum selection clause then?
If we filed this report the way it was, there was no dispute, the doctor says, I've complied with all of my courses I'm supposed to take for patient safety, I've complied with all my monitoring for all the surgeries, and I've comported with everything else I'm supposed to do under the agreement, why aren't you giving me privileges? He'd have a right to sue for that. If there's any other thing in there other than things that are preempted, Eighth Circuit is clearly the place to be. There's no question about that, and we're not contesting that.
But if you have a claim for a breach of a settlement agreement, isn't that a perfectly valid claim to go before the district court?
Not if you can't give a remedy. In order to have a subject matter jurisdiction, you have to have a right, and then you also have to be able to have that court deliver a remedy. There is no remedy that Judge Wall could award that would not...
Apart from an amended report, what you're saying, the language that you included specifically is required by HICLA.
Right.
And the exact language that they are disputing is required by HICLA.
Yes.
Instead of a drop-down default...
There's also additional language that all the hospitals put in to describe the action taken. They have to have a written description of exactly what was the sequence of events, if you will. And that's what they put in there. They don't like what was put in there. The fact is they want to change history and tell lies. What's put in there is exactly what happened. The language he quotes in his complaint is precisely what happened, and he admits it. He just doesn't like that it's in the report, but we have to report that. And the reason why that there's preemption in this situation, judges, is that, you, as I said, you'd have every district judge handling one of these things saying, well, I think that's what should go in the report, or no, I think that's what should go in the report, and 1,000 different opinions about what should go in the report when the one person who's been delegated that by the federal government, who set the reporting requirements in the first place, is the Secretary of Health and Human Services.
Well,
they deal with it every day.
If he hadn't cut short the hearing and he had processed it through to the end and there had been no settlement, he might have persuaded that group of people sitting on that hearing that indeed it was a malicious charge and there was no merit to it and no basis to it. So, but for the settlement, the report that was filed with the secretary might have been different. That's his point, right?
It's possible, but that was his election at the time he entered into the settlement. It wasn't my client forcing him to do that. He could have gone ahead with the fair hearing. He had a lawyer involved at the time. It's in the record. He had a lawyer involved. He could have continued with the fair hearing if he chose. If you look at the preamble to the agreement, to avoid the risks, I mean, same thing as any settlement agreement. It's like somebody saying, well, you could have gone to trial, John, with your client. And some of you know I'm stupid enough to do that a lot. But they could have said that at that point in time, and you can say, well, you had the choice, and now you've been eliminated that because you settled. And they don't like the terms of the settlement agreement. It doesn't take that out of consideration in play, though. He had a choice at that point in time. He determined to go ahead with the settlement agreement. He had a lawyer. They could have put in language, had they chosen to, in an unambiguous contract, they could have put in language saying, this is the only thing you're going to put in the practitioner's data bank, at which point my people would have had to back away because they'd be violating federal law by it. They couldn't enter into that agreement without violating law.
Why can't he litigate that understanding?
I'm sorry, Judge?
Why can't he litigate that understanding? Why can he not litigate in district court his understanding that the language contained in the settlement agreement would be the extent of what you would report to HICWA?
Number one, Judge, the contract is unambiguous. It's clear what it states. It doesn't state any understanding.
You agree that the settlement agreement is a contract?
I agree it's a contract. The problem
then why can't the district court examine it like any other contract and make a determination as to whether there is some problem associated with the agreement, at least in the point of view of the plaintiff?
And at the end of the day, Judge, the question that begs itself is, what can the district judge do after that hearing?
Well,
he can't do anything other than interfere with the federal court.
You've addressed a question that I would like to raise with you. How would a district court order compelling Spring Valley to amend its report to be consistent with the terms of the settlement agreement violate HICWA?
You'd be asking my client by order, to violate federal law. You have to report the reasons for the action.
So if you could demonstrate that to the district court, why couldn't the district court nullify the settlement agreement like any other contract? If the plaintiff proved that that was a material term, that that was their understanding, they relied upon it, and that it was not legal.
Once you've nullified the settlement agreement under that scenario you gave me there, then you have to talk about taking the practitioner's databank report out. You can't. It's a bell that's already rung. You cannot take that out of there. That's a determination.
Well, no,
we still have to file it because there's been...
I got all that. But the practitioner would have his fair review hearing back, something that you say he gave up voluntarily from the settlement agreement. He'd be able to insist on that, would he not?
He'd be able to insist upon that, but the practical problem is you'd be stepping on the federal...
We're not trying to resolve practical problems.
No,
we're trying to resolve whether he legally, under the settlement agreement, would have a right to a fair hearing. If a court determined either that you were required to insert that language and that's all you could say, or the plaintiff demonstrated that that was what I understood the deal to be, and apparently I was wrong, and for legal reasons I can prove to you that that wasn't the deal.
No, because his remedy lies with the federal courts, and then coming, the problem here is ripeness. His case is not ripe. If he went through the secretary, as I described earlier, and we're able to prevail, whether it's a secretary level or...
But your motion didn't seek dismissal of this case on the basis of failing to exhaust administrative remedies. You sought dismissal based on preemption.
No, I don't believe that, and I don't believe you've got subject matter jurisdiction. You cannot order that rescission you're talking about without stepping on federal law. It is preempted law. The second you order that rescission, you're talking about pulling that reform out of there, no matter what that judge does, under the federal law. Once there's a summary suspension over 30 days, my client has to report it, has to report the reasons for it, exactly what was there. Actually, if you on that basis, they still have to report it, but without the agreed-upon language under your rescission. It's not going to solve the problem that the plaintiff's claiming here, and you do preempt federal law.
I think you're focusing on whether there should or should not be a report and what its contents is. I'm focusing on the fact that your client entered into a contract, and what's at issue in the district court are the terms of the contract.
Yeah. You're ordering my client to violate federal law.
I'm not ordering anything.
No, I'm
trying to understand your position, and what you're saying is that a federal HICWA preemption precludes the district court from enforcing a settlement agreement between the parties?
I don't think it prohibits it from enforcing the settlement agreement as to all areas that would not be preempted by federal law.
Okay.
The bottom line is that my client would be in violation by any rescission. You'd be asking my client to be in violation of federal law because there's a mandatory filing requirement for the hospital to file that once there's been a summary suspension that's gone over 30 days. They have to file the report at that point in time. And if you order a rescission, you're telling my client, I'm ordering you to violate federal law, which falls into the category of the Diaz case. And this case is even stronger because in Diaz, they hadn't even filed the report yet, and they were trying to enjoin them. This one's already on file.
What about Doe versus Community Medical Center? What's your thoughts on the Montana case?
The Montana case, again, dealt with that same situation where they were looking at whether or not the report should be filed at all. They were trying to stop them at the inception, not whether the report could be filed, if that had been filed already, and whether it should be pulled out of the federal hands. That one had already been filed. And in addition to that, our contract here, point blank, mandates the filing. That's one of the requirements of this contract, is that you file the practitioner's databank report, but when you do, include this language. And there's nothing ambiguous about it at all. And they did limit how much could be said in personal conversations with other hospitals other agencies contacting. They had a very specific script that would limit it to this is all you can say. They didn't similarly limit it in this contract here. They very easily could have. They had counsel, but no one did. And to the extent that anyone's trying to enforce a contract here, I think Judge Wall stated clearly, he found in the earlier TRO hearing, he says, first of all, whether there's any ambiguity, I didn't find any in the settlement agreement previously. I still don't find any ambiguity in the settlement agreement. I think that was the second basis he had beyond the preemption. He just simply felt that on the face of the complaint, based on federal law and everything else, that my client had complied with the contract. On the face of the complaint, no matter what their allegations are, if you have an unambiguous contract, you can't load up a complaint with a bunch of allegations and get by an unambiguous contract. And Judge Wall clearly had basis for finding it was unambiguous on the central issue to this case that we had in front of us. So I'd be happy to answer any other questions, but I think I've run my mouth probably enough.
Any other questions? All right.
What we have here is a bow with no arrows. And I'm not suggesting, and I have never asked this court or the district court to pull the National Practitioner Data Bank report. And it's not just a matter of agreement. The regulations say that if a summary suspension exists for more than 30 days, and it did in this case, a report has to be filed. That's not the question. The question is what goes in the report. I heard a few minutes ago several times that this agreement is unambiguous. Well, if it's unambiguous, why is there a contention about filing a simple breach of contract action over the contents of that settlement agreement in district court? There's nothing ambiguous about the rest of the agreement. There's nothing ambiguous about Section 16 either. My client is not trying to force the hospital to violate federal law. It can amend it any time.
Okay, so what relief, if we agreed with you, what are you asking us to do as far as a remand to the district court?
But ask for remand so that we could proceed on all of our claims. We've asserted several possible remedies. One is for the court to order the amendment of the report consistent with what they agreed to. The other thing is just rescission of the agreement as well as damages. One point I wanted to make that has to do with that agreement. I'm sorry, I'm losing my track of mind here. The settlement agreement and the Diaz case in particular, ordering the hospital to change its report doesn't put it in the same kind of Hobson's choice that that the hospital in Diaz had. It's because it's always allowed to amend. And I agree with Mr. Cotton on one particular point. He says you don't want district courts coming in here and kind of relitigating all these and changing these summary suspensions. I completely agree with that. And if this were a simple case of Dr. Hoffman was suspended and he filed a lawsuit to challenge that summary suspension, Mr. Cotton would be absolutely right. What's different about this case is we have a contract. We have an agreement between the parties that is binding where they agreed what would be said to the National Practitioner Data Bank. I'm not asking this court or Judge Wall to sit as a super hospital administrator for anyone. That's not the job.
Well, and that goes back to the point again, and I asked several times, was there language that was mandated by HCQA that was included over and above the language you agreed to? And he answered absolutely yes. It comes down from a drop-down menu, and that's part of the required language that we must include in these reports. In that case, isn't there a conflict, and isn't there a preemption?
There isn't a conflict because there are numerous choices in that pull-down menu that they can select from.
And did you negotiate from that pull-down menu what language would be included as part of the required form?
That language was not specifically negotiated. No, it was not.
Okay, then.
I'm simply asking that, well, we've talked about this before. It's not just breach of contract. It's breach of the implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing. And when you don't just follow the exact terms of the contract. You have to follow the intent and spirit of the contract. And when you, I'll wrap up. And when you add language that undermines what you've specifically agreed to, you breach the faith and spirit of that agreement. And that's what's really going on here. Because what they said, they'd agreed to the X language, and they added extra language that completely undermined the purpose of the settlement agreement. And Dr. Hoffman never would have signed that settlement agreement if he knew that that's what they were going to do.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Are you suggesting that your settlement agreement would allow the hospital or any other hospital to ignore what they are required to check under the drop-down?
Absolutely not. No, absolutely not. They have to go through and check these certain items. And it's actually, you'll see the page in the report in the appendix. There are reasons for, and that's part of the drop-down menu. But there are other reasons in there, and they get very specific, and they also get very general, including other. And you could simply refer back to that language and satisfy the HICWA and the federal regulations just by clicking other. And
so it's part of your agreement to click other under the drop-down menu, or
not expressly?
And if there's part of that menu, the language is appropriate to what occurred in this case, are you saying that they should lie?
No, absolutely not. I'm suggesting that what they should do is when they go through that pop-down, pull-down menu, that they simply check off other or whatever sends them back to the language that they agreed on. The language that they agreed on is pretty specific, and it goes through and talks about what happened between the parties as the peer review committee. I'm not suggesting that anybody lie or violate federal law at all, but just simply that they be consistent, not just to the letter, but to the spirit of that settlement agreement. That's all.
All right. Interesting case. Thank you, counsel, for your briefs and your argument, and we will stand in recess.
Yeah, bears you.